Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. The top topics. The headiest headlines. The debatiest debate. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis today. Dave Zarum, Jeff Simmons in from Sportsnet Magazine, and glad you're with us on the weekend. And it is a major weekend for the Blue Jays. We'll talk Rogers Cup later, PGA, Olympics, as we always do with the boys from Sportsnet Magazine. But guys, we got to lead off, pardon the pun, with the Blue Jays. What a ball game last night, Jeff, for starters. I mean, this series comes highly trumped, and hey, there's still 58 games to go in the season, but for end of July, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
That felt like a playoff game, and I know it's just a normal Friday night, but just the atmosphere in the stadium and the back and forth nature of the game, and there's a lot of energy. I don't know if you saw Jason Grilley come out of the eighth inning. You don't often see guys that fired up for a July game.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels different. I don't know. Maybe it's the three teams in the playoff race and just the energy around the Blue Jays right now, but it's a different feel right now to a usual July game.
Well, also, I mean, it was a pretty reaffirming game as well. You know, when you think about going down 2-0 in the first inning, coming right back and getting those three home runs in the first, I mean, that's the kind of performance I think people are expecting from the Jays. They see that. They see the fact that a 2-0 lead really doesn't mean anything for this club, and it just makes you feel better, especially when you're doing it against your division rival. And you're right, like, it was a playoff atmosphere, and I think pretty much every game these guys are going to play for the rest of the season is going to have that feeling. I guess
it's because I've done shows for so many years here, guys. For 20 years, I think the topic around this top of year is, when are we ever going to see meaningful games in September?
Right.
And the Rogers Center is so boring, and the ballpark, I remember you used to go there and it was easy. You get a ticket and you just stretch out, you have your own section. Mm-hmm. Like 11,000 people on a Monday night. Now the place is packed. Nobody talks about it. Winning cures everything. And yeah, the park's got its faults. I don't even want to, you know, waste time talking about that. But the excitement level for regular season games is great. And I think, too, and the casual fan, I talked to a lot of casual and reporters from around America, the Jays are fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're fun to watch. Now, so are the Red Sox and Orioles. But the Blue Jays just, they bash the ball. Like, how do you not like a team that hits a ton of homers and last year scored 900 runs, for heaven's sake?
And they play great defense.
Another one.
And that's an underrated part of that whole team. But you're right. I had a buddy who tried to get tickets Tuesday night against San Diego. And that used to be an easy ticket to get in the middle of July. Only available in the whole 100 and 200 level were singles.
Wow.
To me, that was totally unheard of. And yeah, you're right, Raj. I remember saying it last year. I just want to see meaningful games. I was about 10 years old in 1994. No, I was less. I was 7 years old. And I hadn't really seen an important game around here.
And that's the thing, and not lots of important ones now. So let's talk about the Jays compared to the Orioles and Red Sox, Spencer and Town Boys, and we'll get to the trade speculation in a second and what they do. But if nothing gets done between now and Monday, here's the question. If nothing gets done between now and Monday, which of those three teams we think wins the division? And I'll lead off by telling you, I think it's Blue Jays. I'm not worried that the Blue Jays don't get another pitcher from their perspective, although they could use another starter without question. But compared to the Red Sox and the Orioles, I think their pitching staff is better. I think the lineup, marginally better. The Orioles can bash the ball too. So mm-hmm. can the Red Sox. If nothing happens and Chris Sale doesn't wind up pitching for the Boston Red Sox, I think the Blue Jays are the best team. What do you think?
You know, I still think Baltimore's a bit of a force. I mean, their weakness is obviously that pitching, and we saw it last night, but I really like their lineup. Like you said, they can score runs with the Jays. They can kind of hang with a team like that. Their defense is really solid too, and they got some kind of real good personalities like Machado. I love what he brings to the table. But I wouldn't rule out potentially all three being in that playoff picture right until the end, maybe even all three making it.
Yeah, all three teams are pretty good. But if you have to pick one, I still lean towards the Blue Jays. I think they're the most complete package. And you're right. I think Baltimore does get underrated. They have a really good bullpen. They got incredible defense, but the starting pitching is just so weak.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the Blue Jays kind of get the leg up on them, because Boston's got the most runs of the group. they can really hit the ball. But Toronto, if you combine offense, defense, starting pitching, bullpen now is a little more stabilized with some of their additions. And Upton gives them some pretty good depth and flexibility. And now you got Bautista back, and he hit a home run on Friday night. So I think you got to lean towards Toronto in terms of a complete team that's rolling right now.
And I agree with your point about the starting pitching. Here's my caveat, my reservation, though, boys. And it does make a little nervous. Yeah, I like the starting pitching now. Estrada's back looks a little wonky.
Yeah.
Sanchez is going to the bullpen. All of a sudden, you know what? Maybe I don't like it so much. And if they don't make the deal before August 1st and they don't add, I mean, I'm not going to wish anything on Estrada, but it's obvious he's got some issues health-wise. Sanchez going to the bullpen. Do they revisit that decision? Do they? And it's been the topic also, but it's still a major one. You got a guy who's 11-1. He's in the Cy Young conversation, going to the bullpen. We all know why, but the temptation's got to be overwhelming to let him start.
I mean, it has to, because what are your other options? You know, I mean, I think you really do get incredibly depleted the second he goes to that bullpen, because, like you're saying, Estrada, doctor says he has a bacchiatomy and he's just in a bad place right now. It looks like that. I mean, he's still playing through it, but that's a worrisome ailment, you know, especially for a pitcher. And the depth just isn't there after those guys. So yeah, if you put Sanchez to the pen, what happens to your starting rotation where he's been so effective? So I'm really on the fence about that. I don't know if I would be in such a rush to do it. I understand why the Blue Jays want to, because there's fear about his kind of long-term health, but I don't know. You got a chance this year. So what are you willing to sacrifice to win it this year? That's kind of the big question.
And I'm totally with you on that. And you look at the rotation, and yeah, even a thin rotation is still a lot better than Baltimore. But there are question marks. Marcus Stroman has allowed the most earned runs in the American League and one of the most hits. R.A. Dickey has gone into one of his funks. He's had three bad starts in a row. He tends to even out and end up around 4 ERA, but he's in one of those funks right now. Mm-hmm. So you got him, the volatility of him, Stroman. And then if you take Sanchez out, you got the bad back. And that leaves Hutchison and not much else. They're pretty thin. So if you move Sanchez back, you bring up Hutchison, there's your five. But if something happens to Estrada's back or Dickey keeps throwing up home runs, who slides into the rotation? They don't have that guy.
Has Hutchison proved that he could step in?
That's another one.
Mm-hmm. No, well, we know we know. I think the last year what Hutchison is. You know, listen, and no disrespect to him, he's a decent major league pitcher. And hey, listen, for a guy who's had been up and down from Buffalo in the role, I like what he's done. He hasn't said a word. I think he's been great from that standpoint.
Totally.
But you're trying to win a World Series. There's got to be a better option than Drew Hutchison in a key game when you're trying to win a World Series. How about, because they revisited various things. The only thing I can see, you can't let, you know, Sanchez start every 10 days, you know, like skip a start. You can't do that. So, and that messes everybody else up. So that's a, how about if you just manage the starts and the innings a la, all right, he goes five. The pitch is 80, not 100. Mm-hmm. Can you not save it that way? And we've talked about this off air, guys, but if he's back in the bullpen, you not blow your arm out just warming up, for heaven's sakes? Like, he'll be throwing every day in the bullpen, or pretty close to every day. You'll only be in save situations, but you know what I'm saying? So is there another solution, or you just, look, take your chance?
You know, in a year like this where you really are looking at your chance of winning a World Series and you're saying it might be pretty decent, I think you roll the dice and you take your chance. I mean, these opportunities don't come by very often. Are you willing to potentially sacrifice the next few years of this guy's career or your team's outlook to put yourself in the best position to win now? And the best position to win now means Aaron Sanchez is one of your go-to starters.
Yeah, because say you get into a playoff series, say Sanchez moves to the pen, who are you rolling out as your top three? You got Estrada, who's got a wonky back, who's got command issues, he's getting hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
You got Stroman, who can look great, but he's had a really up and down year. And then it's Hap. Hap has been great.
Mm-hmm.
But are you really comfortable with that in the AL playoffs against these lineups with Texas and Cleveland's pitching? And
no, I think you need Sanchez in that picture.
Here's a funny thing, too. R.A. Dickey has a pretty good chance of winding up being this year's Mark Burley. Like, I can't see him on the playoff. Yeah. I can't see him on the playoff roster, to be honest with you. You can't put him in the bullpen. Like, you just can't put a knuckleballer in the bullpen. You can't trot out Josh Tooley to pitch, you know, catch him when he's pitching middle relief or however you would use him. And you look at the starters, now bets off again. And that comes back again, though, guys, to the need to add another arm, another veteran arm. Yeah. Rich Hill's out there. Helix, you know, they're all kind of, there's names out there. But nobody'd really, and I think we got spoiled last year. Because you know what usually happens at the MLB trade deadline? Not much.
Guys like Darwin Barney.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. But now, my God, last year, people talked about, Tulo and Price and Hawkins and Lowe. It was like, and now I think people are kind of expecting something to happen. And I go back again, boy, if there's a fit out there, and one thing I would do, I would not be, again, some people are saying, well, you know, you got to bring the guy coming in has got to be young and controllable as opposed to a rental. I'd go get a rental.
For sure.
I'm not saying dump it, you know, your entire farm system. But if you can realistically get a rental, that's why I love the Upton deal. Where is the risk in Upton?
Yeah, those deals are hard to find, though. Upton deal was just a free player, essentially.
Part of that is, it's taking advantage of San Diego's situation more than anything else. Yeah,
that's fine, then. There's teams around there that'll do exactly. And if they want to pay Upton to play for the Blue Jays, then they can go right ahead and do it. And I think some of the other ones, the names, guys, that are difficult, you know, you hear them talked about, and it gets a little ridiculous, I think, because you look at teams like Tampa Bay, they have Archer and Odorizzi, but they're not in, like, free agent end of contracts. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay and Oakland, Sonny Gray, same thing. Yeah. That's how they survive.
Those teams don't get any better by moving those guys. But I don't think the Blue Jays are in a market to get a player of that caliber anyways. When you look at what they have in terms of their own assets, it's pretty limited. So what you're looking at now is a cheap pickup, a rental who somehow can cost you, a mid-level prospect or something, because you don't have that farm system to deal from like you did last year. And you're not looking to disrupt things in your everyday lineup or your pitching staff there. So what do you have to work with to get that rental player? And that's where that's the conundrum. You're looking at a Rich Hill type of guy, you know, and maybe not more than that. Because there are teams probably looking to sell some pretty big talent, like Wade Davis's name has been out there. But when you look at what happened with Andrew Cashner yesterday or the other day and the trade to Miami, I mean, they had to give up a ton to get him.
Funny, they're in a real all-win mode.
Miami
is like they are throwing the chips in all of this. It reminds me of the old days of the Marlins. Win the World Series, completely rebuild. Yeah. Win the World Series, completely rebuild. It's been 15 years since they've done it last. But
what do you think about that as a business model?
That is a great question, Dave. I tell you what, and it's funny. I took calls on the Jays last week, guys, and a caller called in, and you know, callers being what they be, and some of them are great. Most of them are great. But this guy called in and led off the discussion with, well, you know, the World Series isn't the be-all and end-all. And I went, pardon me?
Yeah.
The World Series is the only, that's why we play this stupid game. That's why we go through 162 games in 6 months. So to answer your question,
that's why we're talking right now.
I don't like the strat. Of course not. If I'm a fan, you're going to just go all in and then bury, you know, go back down to 20 million. It's ratty. But I'd prefer that as opposed to just kind of hanging around, never taking a chance, and being a team that's always in the mix but never wins anything. So, yeah, go for it. I'm not going to criticize that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up those old Marlins teams, because that's been the question that's kind of been running through my mind as we approach this trade deadline and figure out, you know, what, and with the Sanchez question as well, is figuring out, you know, what's it worth to win a World Series? And I think you would sacrifice everything to do it, because like you said, that is the be-all, end-all. That's why you play.
You got to look at it. That's a good point. And if you look at it like you're giving up a prospect in order to win a World Series,
you're winning a
World
Series. Wouldn't
you do that? Wouldn't you give up a good prospect to win the World Series? So yes. that's there you go.
I know the flip side is, and
it's
a good argument, especially because let's face it, the baseball playoffs are such a crapshoot. But here's the difference maker I see, especially guys when it comes to pitching, bringing in a pitcher for this. The baseball playoffs are different. It's like Usain Bolt. The baseball players are Usain Bolt and the 100-yard dash. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to the marathon of the regular season, there are a lot of guys that will beat Bolt in a marathon, but it's that different. So I get it. You don't worry about the bot, like your seventh, eighth relievers. They never pitch. You don't worry about your fifth starter. You never see him. He's not even on the roster.
Yeah.
For heaven's sakes. That's where if you bring in a pitcher, that's a difference maker. And at least you put all the chips on the table. I look at teams and you're thinking like, you know, even if you can get down to three starters, well, even the Red Sox then. You start with Price. Even the Red Sox, and Wright's been pitching well, and Porcello's been, well, that's all you need. You can stop. Yeah. You don't have to get into trotting out Clay Buchholz out of the bullpen again, or the Yankees last year trying to deal with an old guy coming in. So you add a pitcher, given the different nature of the baseball playoffs, I say go for it. And I don't mean stupid about it, but I'll be disappointed if the Jays turn down a deal because, well, you know what, we really like this guy, and he's kind of a mid-level prospect, and then you don't win. Mm-hmm. The World Series is the be-all and end-all.
Now, the counter to that, and I'm sure there's owners all around the league who would feel this way, and not just in baseball, is that as a revenue-generating business, it's in your best benefit to always be competitive and not and obviously not have those down seasons following an up year.
The old Maple Leafs model.
Here's the thing about the Jays, though. Sanchez is, what, 24?
Yeah.
Osuna's a baby, for heaven's sake. Well, Stroman's a kid. Tulo and Donaldson are locked up on the left side of the infield. Yeah, Bautista and Edwin, there's the concern there. But I don't see that. You're going to fall off? The team's going to fall off completely if they don't. And if one of them walks, they have the financial wherewithal to bring in another free good. Get somebody else in.
Yeah. So back to the point on the pitcher. We were digging through the actual names out there, and we made a list on the site right around the All-Star break, and a few of them are pretty. Cashner got traded already, Pomeranz. There's not much out there. That's the problem with the whole debate. The guys that we have on this list, some of them are just unattainable. Like Rich Hill was probably the top guy on the list, right?
Yeah, I would say so, because the price figures to be a bit lower. He's having a great season. The blister is a concern, but he's a rental, and you know he's being dealt.
Yeah.
Like, unless the only way Rich Hill doesn't get dealt is the A's won't release any information on his blister, and teams say, you know what, it's a rental, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I need him for 8 starts. If he can't, he's going to miss 4. Yeah. No thanks. So, yes, I would agree.
So there's Hill, who's got the blister, and he's 36, and he's never has the track record. So you don't know what his acquisition cost. There's Hellickson, who every team seems to be after because he's the only guy out there who's attainable. And I don't think the Jays can match some of these other teams who have deeper systems. And then I don't know who the guy is that we're looking for here.
It is difficult. I saw that list, and I still looked at it. I looked at it this morning. Talk about the ones. And again, people are throwing out Archer and Odorizzi. Just Chris Sale.
That's not happening
with the Jays. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to say it's not going to happen.
I would love Sale on the Jays.
Yeah. I'd hate him on the Red Sox. See, that's my, back to what we were talking about earlier, is I'm thinking, like, if the Red Sox, and I don't think they would, but they've got so many prospects, and they go, look, he's still under contract to 2019. What the hell? We've got the financial wherewithal to do it. Let's pick him up. And now you got Price and Sale and 3 days rain. It doesn't really make, you know, all of a sudden, oh boy, like, is this team different? That's the only wild card. But I guess you're right. Maybe back at the bullpen, another arm of the bullpen. But you know what? Bringing in Grilly was a great addition. And so far, Benoit, I mean, he's 39. But again, and Rich Hill being 36, I don't care if he's 36 or 56. Mm-hmm. You only want him for 2 months.
Yeah.
You want something for 2 months. And I know a lot of people think, you want a young. It's too much to ask for a young, controllable pitcher without gutting your system or giving up a roster.
And why
would you give up a roster player? So I know it's tough.
And again, you don't have those pieces to give up in the first place, I don't think, compared to a lot of your counterparts. I mean, you're just not going to be in that conversation. You brought up Boston. Their farm system is just loaded with guys. They have so many options in trades. And the Jays, you know, I think they kind of used up those assets last year getting Price and Tulo, which was worth it. But now you're in this position where you don't have much to work with at this point.
Jays and Orioles continue their series, starting with the first pitch 107 today. The game is on Sportsnet 1 this weekend because Sportsnet has the Rogers Cup for the first time, the semifinals and finals. What an exciting weekend it's going to be. But the two big Canadian stars go out. Guys, last night, Milos Raonic was a major disappointment. I watched that match. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say I couldn't believe it. Monfils is a very good player. No questioning that. But yet again, we see with Milos, it seemed like everything is set up. Everything is just in perfect position for you to do it, and he disappoints again. I can't put a positive on that one.
Yeah, neither can I. I mean, the positive could be that Monfils is a guy who's riding a real hot streak right now. I think that was his 9th straight match he won. But, I mean, I'm with you, Raj. That was a winnable match for Milos, and the problem with it was that you saw old habits creep up, and those forehands that went wide, those forehands that went long, some bungles at the net. Those are all the things that he had kind of overcome over the last year or so, especially in 2016, as he's kind of coming into this tournament, Milos was playing the best tennis of his life, and we just didn't see that version of him last night. And it was disappointing because this was an opportunity for him to really go deep, set up a potential semifinal with Djokovic, which everyone would have loved to see that. I mean, credit to Monfils. Like I said, he's on a hot streak and he's keeping it rolling now, obviously. But yeah, that was still a winnable match for Raonic. I don't think it was an upset, you know, like some people may be making it out to be, but it was certainly a winnable match. And he had his chance, and he just, like I said, old habits crept up. It was hard to watch.
And he showed so much progress at Wimbledon, right?
That's the thing, yeah.
And he really seemed like he had turned, I don't want to say one match says he's not turned the corner, because he's been good over a long stretch since like January.
Well, and he doesn't have to turn the corner so much as just take that next step. You're right. And it's not considered an upset because he's still the seventh-ranked player in the world, and he's the seventh-ranked player in the world for a reason. He just has not been able to go to the next level of that.
Yeah, well, that's what
and,
I mean.
And there were the disappointing thing is Wimbledon, and he's playing Roger Federer, and it's like being on the road. Now he's at home against a guy who, I don't care how well he's playing, is not like, well, Federer certainly is not in his prime anymore. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, again, it's set up. And then Murray and Nadal and Federer are not in the tournament. And you have two easy wins. And the crowd's behind you. And you still don't. It just makes you wonder, okay, when is this going to happen? It sounds like I'm crapping on Milos. I'm not. I love him. I think he's great. I like his personality. I like his game. It's just frustrating. You just wonder, when is that perfect time to come and break through? I don't know. Maybe it's a U.S. Open, but I really expected him to at least be in the final.
You're not crapping on him. You're just being rational. I mean, you got to see him sustain it over multiple tournaments. You know, you can't. It's not good enough just to have a run or a good 2 weeks in this sport. I mean, if you want to, you're talking about moving up the rankings. It means consistently reaching quarters, semis, you know, for the course of an entire summer or something like that to accumulate those points. And to do so, you can't have those lapses. You mentioned that Federer match at Wimbledon. What was so good about that was, I thought, was Raonic at the net. How assertive he was at the net, his placement on shots, and that was a real struggle from early on. That was something that Federer was able to really expose in him in their previous matchups. And you just saw it fail him again last night.
That's Dave Zarum, Jeff Simmons along from Sportsnet Magazine. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis. Glad you're with us. Do you guys play a lot of tennis or golf?
I play a ton of tennis.
You play a lot of tennis? Do you ever like smash? Do you play?
I play more golf than tennis.
I play more golf than tennis, too. I very rarely play tennis. But do you ever like smash your racket, Dave, when you're mad and you bang down and you have a little bit of a hissy fit when you're on the court? Because if you do, don't worry about it. A lot of us do. We get frustrated. Jeannie Bouchard does it, and does it in a match where she really looked like she had it. You talk about disappointing. If you'd said before the tournament, these are the results, just the scores, I would have said, well, you know what? That's good. That's some progress. Way she went out. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't smash my racket.
Yeah, he looks kind of too confident.
Classy
individual. You look like a guy who smash
a
racket.
Your clubs are in the lake.
Yeah,
no question about it. But no, yeah, I mean, you saw her just, she had a temper tantrum is really what it was. And she just, it was a little bratty. You can feel the frustration, obviously. I mean, when you're at that level, and she was, we were talking about Raonic poised to make a good run. She looked like she was poised to make a big run at this tournament as well. I really liked her play in the previous matches. But yeah, she just took herself out of that one, you know, totally winnable. I do think credit goes to her opponent who won again last night. The qualifier is now in the semis. I think she's ranked like 121st. She was on fire, and she's really assertive, really aggressive. And obviously it shook Bouchard. But it was a bad look. It's a bad way to lose.
Here's the thing that's frustrating, though, is like when things are going well and you're emotional like that, you're a fiery player.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Tom Macaroon.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, it's just the way he is. Crazy. It drives him. And when you do and you lose early, look, spoiled brat and everything else, can we even fathom her feeling good about her moving forward? Like it's been such, you know, this year, Milos at Wimbledon, if he posts anywhere near the results that Jeannie Bouchard has done in the 2 years since her appearance at Wimbledon, I think we'll be devastated. Like, you see any hope for her?
She seems like she's just kind of leveled off, and she was really ascending at a good level, kind of what Milos is doing now, but I don't want to say there's no hope for her because she's still, there's so much room to grow and she's so much potential, but I wouldn't be buying into that stock right now. I just see kind of this is what she is, and she has her ups and downs, and I hope I'm wrong, but that's kind of how I view it.
Well, I mean, the thing is that when you think about her rise, it was happening, and I was thinking about this watching her loss because the woman she was playing, Kuchova, really reminded me. Raj, I think we talked about this on Thursday after the match, really reminded me of Bouchard 2 years ago, where she was really embracing being the underdog and embracing surprising people. And, you know, everyone expects you to lose the long rally, but you finish it with a powerful winner down the line.
In a hostile environment.
Yes,
again,
yes.
Which was the tremendous great thing for her. No, there's no question. That was a great performance.
But so now let's go 2 years later with Bouchard. she's here today. It's hard to manufacture that kind of hunger, that kind of will, you know. And if it's, I'm not saying she doesn't want to win. I'm not saying she's not trying hard or anything like
that. Hot take.
I said I'm not saying she's not trying hard, but when you're facing someone who is kind of playing for their life, you know, it does. Yeah. It's hard to bring your intensity to match that. You know what I mean? I think that's what we're seeing a lot of times with Bouchard now, is she's more comfortable, obviously, in her standing in the tennis world. And so it's hard to get that fire back, you know?
Well, getting the fire back is right. And then, you know, you look at what's left in the Rogers Cup, and there's some great players, and the world's number one male player is playing today at the Rogers Cup in Toronto. So I think there's still a lot to like about the tournament. But if you really, whether you're Jeannie Bouchard or Milos, you study Djokovic, and Serena's not in Montreal to study, but you look at them, and it's almost like you look at their schedules, and once they're at the tournament, mm-hmm. there is no excuses. And we see them. They get into trouble. They run into difficulty. The stuff that stopped Milos and Jeannie, the top players, and it's unfair maybe to compare Jeannie to Serena. That's ridiculous. Or even Djokovic, one of the greatest of all time, mm-hmm. to Milos. But if you want to be a guy that, or a girl that wins a major tournament, you got to find a way to fight through it, and she just hasn't been able to do it.
No question. I mean, it's a cliche in tennis, but the whole one point at a time, that really is what, I mean, we saw last night with Djokovic. He should have lost that first set when he was in the tiebreaker, and he was down, I think, 6-3 in the tiebreaker, and he just never faltered. You know, you never saw, at least he never showed it if he was thinking about it. He was just kind of stay consistent one point at a time, and it really works. You know, I just did a magazine piece on Djokovic, and we were focusing on, you know, what makes him so good, and on the court, like X's and O's wise, it's his defense and his ability to kind of cover the baseline from side to side and get to balls and return quality shots. But when I was talking to a bunch of people on tour, guys like Philip Bester, the Canadian guy who was his hitting partner at the Rogers Cup last year, they said, yeah, his defense is the best, and that is a big part of it. But really what separates guys like Djokovic is consistency and the mental approach, like that inner game you always hear about. And I don't know how you learn that. You know what I mean? Part of that might just be your personality, you know, how driven you are. Djokovic, he's made over $100 million in career earnings just playing tennis so far. I mean, you would think if he wants to relax, he can, but yet he remains driven point after point. And that's what separates the great ones from the very good ones, and the very good ones from the okay ones, et cetera.
Exactly. The mental toughness in individual sports is the hardest thing.
Yep.
And there are ways you can train it. I know Pete Carroll, the Seahawks coach, there's a book called The Inner Game of Tennis, and he makes all his players read it.
Well, and you know what? That's a great point, especially in terms of tennis, because here's the thing about tennis that's different. We all face adversity. Hey, the Jays are down 2-0 in the bottom of the first inning. But how, and this is what I admire about tennis players in particular, you're down 2-0 mm-hmm. in a best of five. Mm-hmm. It's 100 degrees Fahrenheit. You're facing a great player. You know, I got to be out here another 3 hours, and my chances of coming back to win. And how often do we see them do it?
Yeah.
It's like, and you think, like when we're playing, is like, oh, well, you lose a set, you hit it, you know, you're down love 40, may as well give that point up. They don't. They never give up a point. Never. It's just not in their nature to do it. And that's where it's disappointing when it's Jeannie banging the racket. She's still in the match. Like, it's still the third set. It was, what, 5-3 or 4-2 or whatever. You could see it was getting away from her. But if you're going to be that, I hate to say soft, but if you're going to get that all up, man, I can't do anything or whatever, how are you ever going to get into a position where you work out every
day? And it is so important to be strong in those positions, in tennis in particular, like you said, because, I mean, I've always said that it might be the loneliest experience in sports, you know, in elite sports, to be on that court by yourself, especially when you talk about the slams where you're not allowed to talk to your coaches, et cetera. I mean, you really are out there by yourself to figure this all out. It's why you see tennis players talk to themselves a lot. If you've ever seen a junior tournament, it's creepy. These kids just like yelling at themselves in the mm-hmm. middle of matches. You know, it's kind of the only way, but you have to find a way to get through it.
Stay motivated, yeah.
But mm-hmm. it's up to only you, you know. It's all within yourself, and that's kind of a big difference maker in tennis for sure.
Rogers Cup is on Sportsnet this weekend. Blue Jay baseball on Sportsnet 1. Fun weekend coming up. Lots to talk about. Lots to talk about coming up. The PGA Championship is underway. It's been a weird year in golf. The four majors have been won by first-time winners for the first time. For years, all we heard is, it's too much Tiger. There's too much Tiger. There's too much Tiger. We'll talk about, boy, maybe we could use Tiger right about now in golf. Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis, along with Dave Zarum and Jeff Simmons at Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis this week. Dave Zarum, Jeff Simmons with me. You can listen to Sportsnet 590 The Fan on HD Radio at 92.5 FM and HD Channel 3 in Toronto as well. And you be sure to listen in and watch in at Sportsnet tonight. Madison Keys, terrific player. I know Jeannie Bouchard's a little disappointing, but Madison Keys is going to be fun to watch. She's going to be the next big thing, I think. She's playing at 6 o'clock. That's on Sportsnet tonight. And the world's number one ranked player, Djokovic, also on Sportsnet tonight. Blue Jays on Sportsnet 1, their big series with the Orioles. We'll chat a little more about the Blue Jays a little bit later. But it's a great time. You know, guys, it used to be slow in the summertime in sports. I don't know what it is now. Maybe because we came off the Euro Cup and the big baseball. But it just seems like there's a lot of activity. And one of the great things about the summer is a golf season and the major tournaments. But I'm wondering, Tiger Woods was, and again, I go back 20 years when we were, you know, Blue Jays play a meaningful game in September. We talked about golf. I'm so sick of Tiger Woods. Oh, my God, they show him on television so much. When we went through this, 2008, he had 14 major tournaments for everyone. So 2009, whenever it was. It's been 7 years. We don't even know if he's going to play again. And golf's never been better. Some of the scores, look at the Open Championship. What a great final round. Exciting. And it's, yeah. But nobody's replaced Tiger. It looked like it was. And this year in particular, guys, and we look at the leaderboard of the PGA, it's great. It's competitive. It's exciting. But none of the top guys, Rory, you know, the guys that people like to watch, are there. So how does golf get the interest? It's been fantastic, but they seem to be missing that star power.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to be Rory for a while, but they are kind of missing that. You know, someone who follows the tour obviously won't feel this way, but for a much more casual fan, like dare I say myself, you need those personalities to sell your sport. I mean, so every sport's the same like that. And when you look at the top guys in golf today, I mean, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, Spieth. Again, if you're following this tour religiously, I'm sure there's great differences in their personalities and their approach. But for someone like me, kind of watching from the outside, I don't see a ton of you know, difference between those guys. And it's harder for me to distinguish the stars from one another. And it's a problem in the big picture.
I think you're right. And I think the people who watch golf are going to watch golf regardless.
Yeah.
Those guys love the sport. They'll watch if Jimmy Walker is leading the PGA or Robert Streb. And I think the casual fan, and that's what really sells sports. You need stars. You see it in the NBA, you see it in the NFL. And I don't know if Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson and Jason Day move the needle for the casual fan. They're great golfers. They're having great years. They're kind of this big four assembling, but it's not like Tiger. And Roger's right. You don't really know what you have with Tiger until he's gone. And a lot of people didn't like him because he got too much attention, but man, everyone talked about him.
And a guy like John Daly, I don't know how the hardcore golf enthusiast feels about him. Maybe they think, obviously he's crazy to have him. Maybe he was viewed as something of a sideshow or whatnot, but it drew new fans in.
People love train wrecks. No, that's what he was. He was seriously a train wreck. And he was just, and he was an honest one. You know what I mean? It was just like it was hard. Like, I don't usually like guys like John Daly. I don't. I get tired of people, you know, messing up. I think, hey, you got a great career. How can you not treat yourself better? What's the matter? Yeah. Get into AA, whatever it is you need to get your act together. But him, I still liked. And I don't want to bemoan. I don't want to make this all about, you know, we're talking about the PGA. It's great. Final weekend. It's exciting. We'll look at the leaderboard in a second. But McIlroy and Spieth last year before, that was exciting. Couple of young guns. McIlroy's got a little of that edge in him too. You know, he's all over the place and Spieth is great. But when they're not in the tournament, and this year the four majors, there have been three first-time winners, likely going to be a fourth, although there's a couple of golfers creeping up the leaderboard as we speak as it heads into moving day. And it's just not the same thing without that oomph. But I could say, guys, about any sport, the NBA was never more popular when Michael Jordan and the Bulls were winning 6 championships in 8 years. The league still, it's popular, don't get me wrong. And people get a little disappointed if the Golden State Warriors aren't going to win 3 in a row and they got to switch. You know what I mean? People like dynasties, and I just don't see it right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, for some reason, parody is some people view it as kind of this tremendous thing in sports, but really, if you're talking about building audiences and drawing interest, you need consistent players appearing, consistent teams appearing in big moments. Yeah, like you think of the 80s, like the Celtics-Lakers finals, people weren't getting tired of that. You know, they wanted to see them year after year. And golf has to figure out how to get back to that. I mean, it was something like golf where there's so many fluctuations. It's really hard to be consistent. It really shows you how someone like Tiger, how impressive it was to string together those kind of wins. So I don't know what's going to change in the near future when it comes to the PGA.
And that's a great point, because I remember hearing a college basketball coach say, everyone loves the NCAA tournament. Everyone loves a big upset. But nobody loves the next time when North Carolina Coastal is playing
right
Tony State and you don't see Duke against North Carolina. Yeah. And upsets are sometimes the worst thing for sports, and parity is sometimes the worst thing. And power teams and power players are what sell sports. And when you have Phil and Rory barely making the cut this week, it's not going to get people to watch. Even though we're talking about a major tournament, you're going to get the big golf fans to watch, but guys who are in it for the big players, I don't know.
Leaderboard is pretty good. Jimmy Walker and Robert Streb are tied for the lead at 9-under par. There's some interest in the big-time players in the world. Jason Day at a 65 yesterday. 65. And is at 7-under par and in pretty good shape. Henrik Stenson, who won his first major, one of the first-time major winners, is 6 back. And a couple of golfers back. Jordan Spieth is there as well. Boys, you're so right about that. And here's another thing about people said, did you change your opinion of Tiger Woods' legacy because of what's transpired? And, well, of course, you know, and especially the way, look, he hasn't won a major tournament since his wife was smashing his back of his van with a club. So, you know, listen, honestly, it really does. But when you stop and look back, it even makes what he did that much more remarkable. Like, the guy was, what, 33 years old and had 14 major championships? Like, you're nuts? Like, he was that good. So I guess you do appreciate it from that standpoint. And the personality, people want to have somebody to hate or love, one or the other. Take your pick.
And that was my point with Daly, too. I mean, you didn't have to like the guy. I mean, you could have been in the camp where you think he's a disgrace to the sport, but you're tuning in to watch, and that's really what it's all about at the end of the day.
And you're right with Tiger. I don't know what's inside of me. There's something inherently, but me as a sports fan, I always cheered against kind of those powerhouses. I didn't like Michael Jordan as a kid. I liked the Indiana Pacers, and I didn't like Tiger Woods. The Indiana Pacers were pretty good.
I know.
But I'm not saying I liked watching Michael Jordan play, but I always cheered against the Bulls.
Big
Utah
Jazz fan, too.
No, I'm not going that far.
Well, okay, well.
I'll take the Sonics, but now that I've gotten older and I've grown to appreciate, and I kind of wish I liked Jordan more and liked Tiger more, and even the Yankees when I was 2001, I hated those teams. I was cheering for the Diamondbacks in the World Series. I think I had it wrong. It's easy to cheer for the underdog. It's easy to associate with that, but greatness is what the best part of sport is.
I'm with you on that. My thing has always been I want to be watching history. You know what I mean? That's why I like dynasties. I want to be able to say, I remember watching those Patriots, whatever. I remember watching these great teams in their prime when they were winning. You know, that's what sports, that's the coolest part about watching sports for me is being able to witness history. And when it's these kind of unknowns and different teams playing every year, you don't get that sense of the same sense of importance in what's going on.
Henrik Stenson, to use an example of what we're talking about here, is a terrific guy. He put a performance up for the ages in the last round of the Open Championship. It was so exciting to see. But he's 40 years old, and I'm not going to remember that the same way I remember Tiger Woods winning by 10 shots or even Tiger Woods winning in a playoff or winning the major championships. You're right. Baseball is terrific. We're loving what the Blue Jays are doing, but we didn't like it for 20 years. Why? Because they weren't winning. They weren't around there. And again, you talk about baseball's popularity. When the Yankees were winning World Series, it was the same thing. They went 4 to 5 World Series. Baseball is big. I'm not saying baseball is still big. Don't get me wrong. The attendance is good, but there's a different winner every year, and that kind of dominance sometimes just makes a difference. There's a couple of golfers in the back to watch today. Jordan Spieth is at 3-under, so he's obviously colorful and a fan favorite. Adam Scott at 3-under as well. We'll see how it goes. We got about 2 minutes. The RBC Canadian Open was here recently. One thing about that, and Brooke Henderson and Canadian golf, we spent all this time talking about Milosz and Jeannie. Well, why? Well, tennis is popular. Yeah, it's a lot more popular now. Brooke Henderson, and somebody, well, the Dutoit at the Canadian Open.
That was wild.
Was just crazy. That's what it takes to get us talking about the sports. And we may not like dynasties. We love Canadians doing well.
Yeah, same. You could say, you can argue the same is true for basketball with guys like Wiggins and whatnot. Recently, when we see our own players do it, we're more emotionally invested. And Brooke Henderson's a great example for hope for golf, not just in Canada, but certainly among Canadian fans, because she's so good. She's so young. It's such a great story to follow. And I would imagine as her career progresses, she sustains it, she's going to bring a whole army of new fans with her.
I guess you're right. Maybe I'm wired differently. That thing doesn't work for me. I don't really care if they're Canadian. My favorite baseball player right now is Josh Donaldson. He's American.
Yeah.
My favorite hitter is Edwin Encarnacion. I know. I get the thing for Canadians. I get it. It just doesn't work for me.
I don't think it's about favorites. It's about generating interest. You know,
I know.
It's about getting people talking.
That's exactly right. There were people who had Milos viewing parties.
Yeah.
That were cheering for Federer.
Yes, exactly.
Because they wanted Roger Federer. But they really are watching, and they're all together watching, because there's a Canadian. That's where the hook is.
Really what happens is the Canadian gets your foot in the door, and then once you're in there, then you get to pick your favorite
player.
I'll give
you guys that one.
You are wired differently.
I am wired differently. There's a lot wrong in my head.
There is a lot of loose
things
up there.
The 90s Pacers.
But anyway, that's... Yeah,
that was a good team, man.
Everybody loved that team, boy.
Reggie
Miller. That was really fun.
Reggie Miller, one of the least likable athletes in my life.
It's like cheering for Melbatos. Come on. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis. Dave Zarum, Jeff Simmons around. Coming up in our next hour, well, how about the Olympics in golf? Is that a match? How about tennis in the Olympics? Is that a good idea? And, of course, we got to talk some NFL since Jeff is in the house as well, and an always interesting start to even the training camps in the NFL. It's Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie, along with Jeff Simmons and Dave Zarum. It's Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis this week. Dave Zarum and Jeff Simmons in the Sportsnet Magazine chairs. Glad you're with us. Coming up a little later, we'll talk a little about the Olympics. We'll get back to the Blue Jays. And, of course, the Blue Jays, a big part of our programming on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. With a pregame show at 12:30, first pitch 107. Jay Happ on the mound as the Orioles try to even the series after losing 6-5 and clinging to a half-game lead. Man, it's exciting. Half-game Blue Jays back, Red Sox trailing by a game and a half. Is this going to be fun? And, of course, we're keeping an eye on the trade rumors, and we'll see if anything happens between now and August the 1st to change it off. But lots to discuss, and lots to discuss because the NFL is back. And, you know, Jeff, we'll start with you because you do so much work for on the NFL at sportsnet.ca. But there are people, people talk about our preoccupation with hockey in Canada. I listen to a lot of sports talk radio in America. I cover a lot of major events, and I'm a junkie. I like to get the sports station, find out. There's NFL season and the rest in America. You talk about a league that is just does the best job at being. It's no longer baseball in America. It's football.
Oh, football is a dominant powerhouse in the States, and I think there's only one or two months a year where you can't have a legit conversation about football. And you're right. If you ever turn to radio in the States, it's all they're talking about. Even the off season, it's amazing how much storylines there are in the off season. As compared to other sports, basketball, you got a good 2 weeks where basketball really dominated this year. Their basketball free agency period was great, but football's like that for four off season. The season's only 4 or 5 months, and you're talking football 9 months a year.
Well, it's like an old saying, but the NFL owns a day of the week, right? And it's the same day that the church owned. You know, so how substantial is that?
Yeah, not ironic is not the word. Not coincidental that they have taken over on Sundays and made it America's day without question. So there's a lot of topics, but let's get into some that are interesting. We'll get to Bell's suspension in a second, but I want to start with the Patriots. And we talked about this on air, you and I recently. Is like you have this. It is a weird scenario now that this Brady Deflategate thing is finally over, thank God. You know your starting quarterback is out four games. You know you've got the backup who's going to play four games, but you know the quarterback is healthy. I can't remember when this has happened. People have been suspended at the start of the year for four, but a prominent starting quarterback, so you know the guy you've got from weeks 5 to 18, whatever it is your guy. The first 4 weeks, you have to adjust without it. It's different.
Yeah, you're right. I can't envision any scenario. It's like an injury in training camp, right? I guess that's the way.
But even the injury
it.
Has a kind of, yeah, is he going to be ready to play? When's he going to come back? Yeah. How healthy is he going to be? The guy's ready to play. He wants to play now.
And it's so strange because the NFL is the only sport that doesn't protect its stars at all. Like, what kind of league would not want Tom Brady on the field for four weeks? And they can still get by. It's like, it becomes like a wrestling level drama. But you're right. From a Patriots perspective, it's really weird because you got to now balance. How many reps do you give this guy? How many reps do you give Brady to keep him ready? It's very strange.
But, you know, I don't think it's going to prove to be an issue for them. Like, when you look at that division, four games, they're going to be able to survive that. You look at what Buffalo and the Jets. Jets could be decent this year, I guess. The Dolphins aren't there yet. Even with those four games, I think there's no concerns if you're a Patriots fan, at least, right?
Yeah. I think there's four games, and three of them are at home. So it's pretty reasonable they go 2-2, and they've recovered from a lot worse than that.
You can make an argument, and a pretty good one probably, that, you know, Tom Brady, well, it's not an argument. He's among the best of all time. But the way his career, and 39 years old, who knows how long he can play, he doesn't have the same kind of ending of his career that a Peyton Manning was looking at in Indianapolis in terms of like, well, what are we going to do moving forward? Nobody seems to care. That's at age 39. Brady's numbers are still terrific. There's been no drop off, really. And I would make the argument, and this is the argument I really want to make. I think it's a good thing he's got 4 weeks off, because you know what? At this stage of the career, healthy and 4 weeks still with the team, he'll be fresher. If anything, he's run out of gas down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, I've never thought about that, but it's, yeah, hearing you say it, it seems like a no-brainer. Yeah, basically, you're giving an aging guy 4 weeks to rest up. Yeah, can't be a bad thing.
And the thing with that is, too, they had a terrible offensive line last year, and they could not protect him. He took a ton of hits, and I don't remember. Yeah. Remember that playoff game they lost against Denver last year? He was beaten up by Von Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get him 4 weeks away from taking hits, and they're playing the Cardinals in the first week, who have one of the most ferocious defenses in the league, that's not a bad thing.
Cardinals, is that the best team in the league this year?
I think top to bottom, it's Arizona and Seattle. And I think Arizona, you give them a bit of an edge. They got a better offensive line. They got better receivers. They're a little younger. But Seattle's right there. Seattle's got a better quarterback situation. Carson Palmer turns 37 this year. And really, Carson Palmer was the one thing that prevented them from winning the Super Bowl. I thought they were the best team last year. And Palmer had that massive meltdown, 5 interceptions or something. But, man, those two teams are good.
Now, you look at Seattle, it's an interesting thing. Lynch out of the picture, and you look, they've locked up the front office. They have just been really, in the last 2 to 3 years, the most dominant team in football when you think about it. In fact, we talked earlier about dynasties. They came pretty close to having a dynasty. Never mind New England in terms of the way they did make it to back-to-back Super Bowls. Like, that's a great team.
And if you look deeper into some of their numbers, it's pretty remarkable. I think they're the only team in the NFL who's been the number one defense 4 years in a row since in the modern era. And Pete Carroll's done that with 3 different defensive coordinators. So they've mismatched their personnel for years, and they've still maintained, which is so hard to do in this free agency world. And now you got the quarterback who took a huge step last year when Marshawn Lynch was out. And that's really the one way to sustain in today's NFL. You need that top-level quarterback, and it seems like Russell Wilson is that guy now.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Roger Lajoie with Jeff Simmons, Dave Zarum this morning. Glad you're with us. In a league that is dominated by quarterbacks, why is it so difficult for so many teams who are just great teams needing kind of, I mean, Sanchez, Fitzpatrick. I mean, not Fitzpatrick, a little different. It's a 1 year deal with the Jets. It's kind of an audition contract. But the number of the lack of great quarterbacks still that primetime teams have in this league. What's the deal?
I think it's a deeper issue. And I think if you look at even the high school and the college level, they've gone to spread offenses a lot and kind of finicky. The way like Oregon runs their offense is so different. And then when you get to the pros, it's such a different game. And these guys aren't being trained at the high school and college level to be pro-style quarterbacks. And that's why a guy like Andrew Luck was so hyped and talked about. And even a guy like Marcus Mariota last year, he had to learn to take a ball out of the shotgun. He'd never done, I mean, under center, he had never done that before.
And Luck is now looking like such a rarity to be able to step in and be a kind of star from day one at that position. I mean, now it's taking years to groom guys, right? And
even the guy who went number one overall this year, Jared Goff, he's not a sure thing by any means.
Yeah.
And you're just not seeing these pro-style quarterbacks being developed. Even the best college teams, a lot of these teams don't have got, like Alabama's been under Nick Saban, the most dominant. They haven't had a guy go to the NFL who's had an impact.
So the Buffalo Bills have been looking for a quarterback forever, and they think they've got one. Maybe they do. And Fitzpatrick, speaking of, getting the one-year deal with the Jets, these are the teams that are facing Tom Brady and New England in the East. It just makes you that makes it even more obvious why the New England Patriots have dominated the division for 12 years.
Exactly, and they've had Brady is arguably the best quarterback of all time. There's certainly a case for that, and these teams haven't had even a good-level starter throughout that period. The Bills have had so much trouble finding a quarterback since Jim Kelly left, and you have the Doug Flutie years. And then outside of that, Tyrod Taylor's probably been their guy with the most upside, but you just don't know what you're going to get from him. He was great last year. He hit a lot of big plays. He moved around his legs, but a lot of things he struggled with intermediate throws. He struggled in the fourth quarter, and they don't even know what they have from him. They've been trying to negotiate a contract, but they want to see more because they don't really know.
Who are some guys who you see as like kind of the next crop who can emerge and become legitimate stars of the position? Like, is Teddy Bridgewater a guy like that, or his ceiling seems fairly limited?
He reminds me of Alex Smith a little bit. Okay. He's like a solid, safe guy. You can win with him, but I don't see the playmaking skills. I think the guy to me is Derek Carr in Oakland.
Okay.
And Oakland is a team who's been bad for so long. They really look like they're ready to take the next step. And Derek Carr kind of reminds people of Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if he'll ever be that good, but he's big, he's strong, he's smart, and he can move. And Blake Bortles in Jacksonville is another guy who really took a big step forward last year.
I think Jacksonville's going to have a nice year this year. They made some nice pickups. I really like their draft. If Bortles breaks out. But, you know, one team I wanted to bring up, and we were talking about earlier, is Houston. I mean, you talk about the quarterback position, how important that is. It was embarrassing the way they lost in the playoffs. Their quarterback play was embarrassing. And then they spent, I forget the number, but an insane amount to get Brock Osweiler. Not really a proven guy, but they at least see the potential for something there. And it just seems teams are chasing that quarterback so hard, and maybe in Houston, Osweiler can be the guy. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Simmons?
That's the biggest question, because the rest of that roster is really, they have a championship-level defense. They added a ton of speed to their team. They got Lamar Miller from Miami at running back. They drafted a couple of receivers, and they have DeAndre Hopkins, who's probably one of the five best receivers in the league. So the one thing they need is that quarterback. And Osweiler certainly got the talent. It's just, you don't know. In Denver, he was hot at some point, and then he was a mess. And John Elway didn't feel comfortable re-signing him at that number. That was pretty telling. But Bill O'Brien, their head coach, is really good at developing quarterbacks. So you're right. If Osweiler's good, that's a team that can be a dark horse in the AFC.
Now, speaking of Denver, you left Denver out when you were talking about the better teams in the league, Arizona, Seattle, and some other teams. And we talked about it off air. There's kind of that mix of teams that's bottom of the feet of contenders kind of that are always in the NFL. There's 10, 12 teams that could easily make an argument with the Super Bowl, but what about the defending champs and their decision to replace Peyton Manning?
Well, what's interesting about Denver is that we're talking about how important the quarterback is and all the great teams. When you look at if you're making your power rankings today, how most of the top 10 or whatever, those would be the teams that have that superstar quarterback. But Denver showed last year that you don't really need that. Like, maybe you can build a great defense, a solid run game, and just have someone passable at that position, no pun intended. Maybe that's the formula. I don't know.
It's definitely a formula that can win, because when Seattle won their first Super Bowl, Russell Wilson was still a playmaker. He hit big plays, but he wasn't a great traditional passer. And they got a lot of their offense from Marshawn Lynch and hitting on play-action passes. And you're right, Peyton Manning could barely play last year at the end of the year, and they beat New England. They beat Cam Newton. They beat Pittsburgh. But for that to happen, you need a championship-level defense. Mm-hmm. And defenses tend to regress year over year. And Denver's a team who lost some good players. So if you're going to win like that, you have to have everything else working for you.
Yeah, trying to do it a couple years in a row is difficult. And a dynasty in the NFL is impossible. How about the Green Bay Packers? And we talked about Aaron Rodgers. There's one team that you have no worries about quarterback, superstar quarterback, one if not the best in the game, like Brady in New England, a good surrounding piece. But because of injuries largely, they've kind of stalled. There were teams some people thought, hey, that might be a multiple Super Bowl championship team. Now they seem to get to a certain stage and get stuck. Are the Chiefs heads in for a good year, bad year? What do you think?
I think they're going to be right in the mix. They're still a pretty good team, and Aaron Rodgers, he's really fired. He had a bad year last year. One of the most important stats for a quarterback is yards per attempt. I think he was 30th in the league last year, or he was in the bottom five, and that was worse than a lot of bad quarterbacks. And without Jordy Nelson, he was not the same player, and he's really motivated to get back on track. And they still have a pretty good team, but the thing with them is they haven't really built up their defense like some of the other teams have. New England started to do that now. Arizona, Seattle, Carolina's still got a fierce defense. They have Clay Matthews, and outside of that, they don't really have those young stud defensive guys. And that's kind of what you need to have with the quarterback. And when Green Bay won, you're right, it looked like they were going to be the team that could dominate the next 5 to 7 years. And they went, I think, 15-1 the next year and then lost in the playoffs. But they haven't been able to take that step.
But you get the feeling that they're aware of that in exactly. Green Bay. You know, they know that's what – I'm thinking the draft last year, they got that cornerback.
Exactly.
But that's obviously a big weakness for them. But you feel like you were saying, Raj, like with a guy like Aaron Rodgers, put a couple of weapons around him and you're always going to be a threat. And that might be good enough for them.
I think they're a team to watch. It will be fun indeed as we follow the NFL season training camps open, Buffalo Bills in particular. So the Olympics coming up, and, you know, even when I just say the sentence, the Olympics coming up, it comes with a kind of trepidation of you wonder about the just there's and it's always a case in Olympics, guys. There are so many stories leading up to the Olympics that supersede the Olympics. And when they're on, you know what? We're going to be gripped. We're going to be watching. You guys will be doing shows during the Olympics, and you're going to be talking about, wow, did you see that last night? And Bolt and what have you or whatever. But the whole stigma of Rio, does it kind of spoil the experience? We saw it with Beijing. We've seen it where there's been other controversial hosts of the Olympics. How do we even feel about this heading into it and what the expectations are? And we're just kind of, I think right now the expectations are cross fingers, hope nothing happens.
Yeah, I think the expectations are worse than that. But you think of Sochi last time around as well, how much, you know, kind of the dark cloud hanging over that. And then once the game started, it was just about the sports again, you know. It is a weird kind of bridge to cross because that Rio situation is ugly. I mean, it's the public spending and whatnot. That's what really is kind of hurts the most, I think, is to know. I mean, there'll be more coming out from it, but you see all the horrible kind of living conditions around all the venues, the sewage issues and whatnot, and to think of all the money being pumped into that city to build state sports stadiums, which, you know, yeah, we all love sports, but it doesn't really matter. Like, I'd rather people be healthy and not have to, like, sleep beside open sewage. So to see kind of when an Olympics comes to a place like Rio, to see where the priorities rank is really troublesome, and I don't know how to get past that.
Yeah, I can't remember an Olympics with this little hype and buzz, and there's much more negativity. But you're right, I think once the games start, people will get into it, and the sports will take over. But you're right, there's a lot of question marks, and so many cities are just left in tatters after.
That's the other thing, yeah.
You can tell how big a hick town is now and how much they want the Olympics. There isn't a city in the world that is worth its salt. That's how I feel. Mm-hmm. I can't stand the Olympic Games. I love we all love the competition. I'll be talking about it too, hosting. Oh, wow. Bolt was great. Did you see the basketball last night? It was terrific and all that. But as a business entity, it is ridiculous. Nobody likes the IOC. Did they do enough about Russian athletes? I mean, the criticism was if you want to ban them. But, you know, I saw both sides of that issue, guys. And Dave, I tell you, I do side for an athlete who's trained all his life, who is clean, if there is such a thing as a clean Russian athlete, who has tried to get into the Olympics, and now it's pulled, and they came up with a hybrid reason, and end of the day, it would appear that most Russian athletes are going to be able to compete in Rio.
Yeah, it really is a tough one, because on the outside looking in, you want to say, you know, you need to be penalized, you got to keep some kind of integrity in the competition. And if it's so widespread, you know, then you got to react with a harsh penalty. But like you said, man, if you are one of those athletes who is clean, to have to be penalized for that, to have especially something like the Olympics, those sports aren't being followed. A lot of those sports aren't being followed in the same way during the 3 years between or the 4 years between the Olympics. This is your one chance. Now it's taken away from you because of someone else's actions. So I could see that. But I think in this specific scenario, a heavy hand would have been more appropriate.
What do you think?
It's a tough one because, yeah, you're right. Like, it's like the college sanctions where the players get held back for the team's problems and you feel like, why are these kids getting... But you got to send a message, right?
Mm-hmm. You have to do something. There has to be punishment.
It seemed like a half measure.
Yeah.
And half measures rarely work. I think there was a line in Breaking Bad, you never go half measure. There's something... Mike said something like that. But I would have liked to see something a little stronger to send more of a message that this isn't okay, especially since they were the host of the games. And it just seemed so there's so many problems with the IOC already, and there's so many red flags. And then to see that, and then they didn't get off, but there wasn't really a punishment.
Well, it feels dirty. It's like you have, yes, exactly. Also you have, you know, I always think when we're talking about the IOC, I always think about FIFA, mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And you have this kind of connotation or this thing you associate with FIFA that is corrupt and whatnot. And I kind of feel the same thing with the IOC. So I think when the IOC has this opportunity in front of them to really make a public statement, when they don't do it, it just only kind of, for me at least, it just only reinforces those questions around the organization.
Now, we talked about athletes wanting to be a part of the Olympics no matter what and not being banned because they just live for it. And every 4 years, you get your own chance. That's not true of NBA players. That's not true of tennis players. That's not true of golfers. They have all the trappings of a luxury lifestyle and wonderful. And then once every 4 years for 2 weeks, hey, that sounds kind of cool. I think, and by the way, I would like to know where the NBA players are staying. I bet you they're not staying in some of the rooms I've seen tweeted on Twitter from Rio. I'd like to find out what accommodations they have. I would suggest to you there's a few luxury hotels there, and if you need to find one, look for the NBA players. But what about that aspect? Basketball aside, basketball has been such a success in the Dream Team, and it's more established. But golf, first time in 104 years, somebody decided, hey, golf should be in the Olympics. And a lot of the golfers said, yeah, that's great, without me.
Yeah.
What's the point of that?
Well, I'm going to assume they weren't anticipating all the top players dropping out when that happened. But I mean, how much do you think that is because of its placement during the golf season? And golf, you know, you mentioned it's been a century, just Olympic golf just not being something on these players' radars. You know, Olympic gold is something that a guy like LeBron can grow up, or Kevin Durant can grow up thinking, I want a gold medal because the guys I grew up idolizing, they got a gold medal. You know, I want to be able to have that on my mantle as well. Golf doesn't have that, right? Because none of these guys have seen Olympic golf going through. But the thing I always wonder is how much of that is because there's no legacy of Olympic golf, and how much of that is because of what we were talking about earlier, the conditions in Rio and the worries about the Zika virus and whatnot. So I'm not sure what's getting the top golfers to say no. And that's probably something worth looking into for the IOC, certainly. But it does certainly deflate that competition when you know the top players aren't going to be there. It just does.
Exactly. And you look at the players who have dropped out from which sports. It's golf, it's tennis, it's basketball. It's the sports that are big all year. And the guys in the swimming and the diving and that kind of thing, they're not dropping out. You're not seeing the big names drop out because
they have the same Zika virus and lousy accommodations security concerns. And the for them, this is it, though. They're going.
That's it. And that's the difference. Or something like golf, I think winning the Masters is a lot bigger than winning the Olympics, right?
Brooke Henderson, 18 years old, helping Canada. Hey, Canada's a defending champion. Do you think the pressure will get to him 104 years ago when they start talking about Canada won the gold medal 104 years
ago? It's like the Cubs.
I would think so. Yeah,
yeah, but nobody's played. It's 104 years off.
You don't have to tell them everything, right?
She's a great story. So I'm interested to see that. So to see how Canada, because, you know, maybe Canada can win a medal. And then again, we go back to what we were talking about in both tennis and golf on the PGA and tour. When a Canadian wins, it gets more exciting. So there is that. And then there's Jeannie Bouchard, who's going to play. Well, you talk about the time to have a breakthrough. That'd be kind of cool if she managed to do that in the Olympics. But how much are we looking forward to seeing tennis and golf in the Olympics as opposed to basketball and especially golf? I mean, tennis, like, who won the gold medal 4 years ago?
Switzerland.
Who was the individual Olympic?
Federer.
Okay. Was it Federer or was it Andy Murray? I think it was Andy Murray.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just
kidding. Exactly. That's the point. See, I dream of getting the medal. We can't even remember who the defending champion is. And you have to be probably 112 years old to have you know, the memory of who won. So what are we looking forward to?
I'm really looking forward to, and I never thought I'd say this in my life, to the doubles tennis action in the Olympics, because it's going to be really cool. You know, you mentioned Bouchard with the chance to bounce back on that kind of a stage. But Daniel Nestor and Vashik Pospisil as a doubles team, I think, is, I don't know if it's going to be, I think it should be appointment viewing for at least Canadian tennis fans. They're going to be a real threat to medal. And those Nestor in particular is just so overlooked. Deserves so much more attention, and this is a great opportunity for him to get. I mean, he's playing Rogers Cup today, center court, later this afternoon, but the Olympics is a really chance for him to kind of get that stage, I think.
What do you think?
What sports am I looking forward to?
Like Daniel Nestor, doubles tennis? You like this guy? Or like
basketball and track. That's what I like about the Summer Olympics.
The classics.
Yeah, oh, it's the basketball is my favorite part of the Summer Olympics. It's every game is appointment viewing for me.
Even if it's a 60-point U.S. win?
He likes to watch the slam dunks and the uncontested layups of the NBA players when they beat six. Yeah, exactly. Washington Generals have a better chance of beating the Globetrotters than some teams do of beating Team USA.
When I was young, I got a VHS of the Dream Team. When people still use VHS, I bet you some of the people don't know what that is. But all those games were pretty much blowouts, and that was the most fun basketball team I've ever seen in my life. Yeah.
So see, that went back into what we were talking about earlier, though, in terms of if you like dynasties. Like, who wants to watch that? That Olympic thing was the United States winning by 60 points.
Because you were watching history, and there was something special about that.
But that team was insane. This team's not doesn't have everyone. There's no LeBron. But, man, even if you've seen some of the highlights of DeMar DeRozan so far, they've been crazy. And then you add in all these superstars. And a guy, Paul George, is a guy who, like, I loved watching him in the playoffs.
He's going to be great. DeAndre Jordan just looks like an alien next to all these. When you see him like play against China and whatnot, he just looks so much bigger and faster and stronger than everyone else.
Well, who's scary are the Blue Jays, and we're going to talk about them to wrap up Sportsnet Magazine Live. Is it all in? How much more of the future do you have to give up this year, and should you? We're going to run down the Blue Jays lineup today and how you cannot at least try to find another pitcher for that team. As Sportsnet Magazine Live continues, I'm Roger Lajoie in for Ben Ennis, Dave Zerum, Jeff Simmons alongside from Sportsnet Magazine right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Roger Lajoie for Ben Ennis, Dave Zerum, Jeff Simmons with me. Blue Jay baseball coming up pregame 12:30. First pitch 107 right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can also pick us up on HD radio at 92.5 FM, HD channel 3. And of course, Blue Jay baseball, a big part of the television scene. Sportsnet 1 today for Blue Jay games, Rogers Cup semifinal and final, both men and women on Sportsnet. Check it out. And plenty to come today. All right, guys, let's play the devil's advocate here. The Blue Jays playing the Orioles. We know what the season's like now. Regardless, this is a great year. You look at that lineup, it's lethal. My goodness, you see it today. Bautista, Donaldson, Edwin, Saunders, Tulo, Martin, Pilar, Travis. I'm forgetting who I missed.
Like, Upton.
Upton. Forgot Upton. Yeah. Wow. Forgot about him. Seventh hitter.
Like, Bossman Jr.
You can't. It's crazy. And you're going to have Drew Hutchinson pitch and Jason Grilli coming out of the bullpen, are you? Because you're worried about your prospects for next year. And let's talk about next year. Eliminate Bautista and Edwin if they both go. I'm not saying, and then you say that, and everyone, oh, get rid of everybody and clean out your farm system. No, but that's a generational kind of lineup you got. You have to get another pitcher. But between now and Monday, and I don't want to hear about this guy's really good at Double A.
But here's the thing, you're not going to give up Bautista or an Edwin to do that because that you sacrifice this year to do so.
No. I'm not saying trade them.
So then, what do you have to get that pitcher? Like, yeah, you need that pitcher. You got this opportunity this year. You need another arm. But what do you have to give up to get another arm? Like another
prospects,
quality arm?
Cash? Take the whole contract? Money? I don't care.
They depleted a lot of their most valuable prospects doing that last year. So I think that's the biggest challenge for you. Like, I'm with you. It's a no-brainer. Add arms. Go for it. Look at this lineup you have. Don't waste this opportunity. You're so close to being right there. So sacrifice those middling prospects because who cares what happens 10 years from now when you can win a World Series today. But I just don't see the assets to get a top-flight arm in here. Whereas your rivals within the division, the people you're fighting for a playoff spot for, they do have those kind of assets to really make a significant trade that I don't think the Jays can.
Well, that doubly compounds it then, because if it's the Orioles or the Red Sox that get Chris Sale, and the Blue Jays can't get Chris Sale because they don't have enough. I get that.
But that's the biggest thing.
I understand that. That's the big thing. I'm realistic from that standpoint. And yes, you can't deduct from your lineup to add another I got it. It's not a year for a blockbuster thing. But I do not want to hear, Jeff, from anyone in this organ, I hope, being, well, you know, we were going to do it, but it cost too much, or we really like the prospect thing. Look, they've got Sanchez, Osuna, Stroman, Donaldson, Tulo locked up on the left side of the infield, Kevin Pillar in center field, like, and a financial wherewithal to spend. So Bautista and Edwin go. Of course, that's significant. By the way, I think they should try to resign them both, but regardless, even if they go. So it's not like, well, you're going to give up your prospects. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next year? They're going to be pretty good next year, too, I think.
In theory, I'm totally with you 100%. If there's someone available they can get and they don't pull the trigger, that'd be a huge mistake. But I don't think there's the guy there. I was digging through the teams and the players and who's selling and who's buying. I can't target a starting pitcher that makes sense in the example you're talking about. The only guys you can find right now are innings eaters. And those guys aren't going to, those guys are guys the Jays couldn't get. But the guy, the stud that you seem to be talking about, I don't know who's out there.
Well, I don't necessarily say a stud, and you're right. And it's like it's, we're talking, you know, everybody from who's been mentioned in trade rumors, from Hellickson to Sonny Gray to, well, Chris Sale now. I'm not talking, you're not going to get Archer or DeRozzi from Tampa Bay. You're probably not even going to get somebody inside the division. And even if it's another let's put it this way, if you can find another two relievers, and I did a pretty good, Gurley turned out to be a pretty good pickup. Mm-hmm. And so far, you know, Benoit has been okay, but I don't have great expectations from him. Then leave Sanchez in the starting rotation.
Yeah, that I'm with you 1,000% on that one. Sanchez to the bullpen, while it may be inevitable, I think is a worrisome move because I don't know how much better you get as a result of that. But to your original point, like, I agree, you need to do anything you can to acquire the best player you can, because you have this window. Yes, it's sustainable because you got this core in place, but really this year you got a great opportunity to get to a World Series, maybe even win it. So I'm willing to sacrifice my entire future to do so, because at the end of the day, we're here to win championships. So I'm okay to sacrifice my future for that. I just don't think it's a viable option this time around.
Yeah, fair enough. If I had a roster full of 40-year-old guys, I would say that. And somebody asked me that. I did a show this week on the air. I said, well, what are you talking about? You have sacrificed the future. Part of the future is Sanchez, Estrada, but not Estrada so much, Stroman, Osuna. Mm-hmm. There is, it's not like the team's going to implode. I get it. This is not the Florida Marlins. Here's another reason. Well, they're the Miami Marlins now, but the Florida Marlins back then. Here's another reason. The ownership can, Bautista and Edwin walk. Oh, that's decimating. Why is that decimating? Of course it's decimating. Longtime veterans, you'd like to keep them there. Mm-hmm. Just go sign somebody else.
Yeah.
If you're going to spend $150 million on the payroll, you are always going to be ahead of somebody else. So why should I feel bad about it moving forward? And I get it. You know, you come in and you want to do this. We talked about the excitement of Rogers Center. Here's another factor. So are we all agreed it's all about winning, and winning brings the fans?
Yeah.
Winning
and last 2 years.
How come nobody goes to games in Cleveland, Tampa Bay, or Oakland?
I think it's winning and personalities.
There, bingo.
Yeah.
And fans that say, you want me to take my wallet out? Everyone's talking about how great Cleveland, they're in first place. They got an outdoor ballpark. Mm-hmm. The Atkins are so smart, they brought them up. There's nobody in the park. There's nobody there. There's nobody in Tampa Bay. There's nobody in Oakland. There's nobody. They're winning. Well, not this year, but you know my point.
Yeah.
These franchises, you say, well, just win, people will come. You, of course you have to win, but you also got to excite your marketplace. And if you want people to spend money, you got to, and I'm not saying they're not, they are spending money. That's why I'm not concerned. Bautista and Edwin go, well, you know what? Replace them, find somebody else, get another free agent. You can do it. And as long as they continue to do that, you need stars. Yeah. People, you don't fill ballparks without stars.
Well, that's why no one's in Oakland right now, right? They traded their starter Toronto for Brett Laurie.
Well, that was you talk about the among the worst deals of all time when you really take a look at it. I mean, that was ridiculous.
I believe we talked about this before, but did any of us know that Donaldson was going to be this good?
Not Donaldson, not MVP good. No. But how could you know? How could anybody have known?
Yeah, was it considered an even trade at the time?
No.
I don't even remember.
No.
I remember seeing it and saying, what the hell is Oakland thinking? Okay. Because Donaldson he started to jump up. And that was in Oakland, which is probably the hardest place in the league other than Seattle to hit.
To hit, yeah.
And you see, you bring this guy to Toronto in that lineup, he's going to take a jump, but you didn't think like this.
I knew there were, in both the Donaldson deal and Tulo deal, because I mentioned the left side of the infield locked up with those two guys, fantastic players, both former MVPs. Think about that. You got a left side of the infield, and you got two former MVPs. One in seriously, and
locked
you're worried,
and
long term, and three young guns in the and you're telling me the team is going to slip off, and you can't trade some guy at Double A, or you can't trade Dalton Pompey because you know they're going to be really good moving down the road. Give me a break, please. But those two deals in particular, and you're right about the Donaldson one. I understand. Yeah, there's prospects. I'm not saying. Of course, they become good. And a couple, we're watching Syndergaard pitch for the Mets. Mm-hmm. I get that part. But there is a certain time in a team's history where you are right at the cusp of greatness. Not just we're going to be good for a couple of years and everything else. And I applaud the fans. They've all bought in. They've sold the ballpark out. If I'm the ownership, I'm sitting back and I'm going, well, you know what? Not only are we winning, but we got the popular players. I would just like to see, and again, maybe I'm wrong on this, guys. I don't see the Blue Jays leading the American League East in attendance if they're going to do business the way they do it in Cleveland. Yeah, I don't care if they're winning a lot of games.
No question. And you're right. Like strike while the iron's hot. You have this window right now, so go for it. But you need two to tango. So you need your Double A guy or Pompey, like to use your examples, Raj. You need other teams to look at those guys and think, I want him on my team. And I don't know if that's the case with a lot of the Jays farm system at the present moment.
Yeah, nothing sells fans like hope. And the cities you mentioned, there's no... Cleveland, there should be hope right now, but this year. But there's a reason that Shapiro left Cleveland to come to Toronto, right? He wanted a bigger budget to work with. He wanted the ability to buy players like that. In mm-hmm. Cleveland, they weren't able to add B.J. Upton's or Melvin Upton or add money or add take on. That doesn't happen. And in Toronto, you have the power of the ownership. You have the players. And yeah, all indications are this team should be buying, and they should be buying more pitching because that's the one thing. They really shored up their depth with that Upton addition.
That was great.
Yeah.
Burley was great. So far, Benoit has been great. You know what? They have taken some steps already. And I said at the start of the show today, and I'll continue to say it, if nothing gets done major in the American League East and the Blue Jays win the division, I think they got a heck of a shot at it. I really do. If the Orioles or Red Sox find a way to make a move and do something, then it's not all bets are off, but then the landscape changes. I love the way this team's positioned. And another reason Ross Atkins came to Toronto, and let's be honest, he wanted a bigger budget to work with.
Ross Atkins the is bigger, the star, though.
The bigger budget is his paycheck. They pay a lot more right. than Cleveland does. And that's another reason a team and an organization, you can get the best guys in baseball because you can pay more than Cleveland. Cleveland could not pay those guys in the front office what Toronto did. Why do you think Mike Babcock's coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, yeah, I mean,
he saw the opportunity of wonderful, close at the cusp of a cup, $50 million. Yeah, you know what? I think I'll hang with you guys for a while.
Yeah, and it's a major market, you know, fourth largest in North America. I mean, that stuff matters to some people. But you know, to what you're saying, Raj, like, so you mentioned Baltimore and Boston, and part of the reason why I think the Jays need to be so desperate to add that arm is even just some sort of gamesmanship to try to stop those teams from adding an arm. Yeah, you can't compete with them in terms of the asset department, but if they add pitching and you don't, that changes the balance pretty significantly, I think. Right now, I'm with you. Jays are looking fairly comfortable. It's going to be close down the stretch, but Jays are, you can make an argument for them as much as the other teams. But if those teams go out and bolster their staffs and the Jays don't, I don't know if we're having the same conversation a month from now.
That's my point exactly. Does Alex Anthopoulos get enough credit for this? Does he, like, I mean, I know, it's his ball club.
It's his team. You know, you don't hear much from him, I think, is maybe because it might be painful to a degree, the way everything unfolded. It certainly wasn't an ideal parting. But I guess to answer your question, no, because this is his team and they're doing very well and it's his fingerprints all over it.
I'm going to take this one step further. And obviously with Anthopoulos, you got to talk about all the guys he added. He traded for Donaldson. He drafted Sanchez. He traded for Estrada. He traded for Travis, for Anthony Gose, who's turned out to be a total mess. And you just keep going through this lineup. He traded for Tulo. His right-hand man was Tony LaCava, who was running the front office in the offseason. LaCava's the one who signed Jay Happ and Estrada back. Ross Atkins wasn't in the organization yet.
Yeah.
They were working on this stuff starting at the end of last year. So this is kind of still a tie from Anthopoulos. Anthopoulos made some big mistakes. That Mets trade is one of them. No matter if you like Dickey, that was a mistake. And he made some bad trades and bad signings, but man, this team he put together, This was all Alex Anthopoulos.
Donaldson, Tulo, and Estrada, and I can end the conversation right there.
Travis.
There's lots, but I'll end it right there. Yeah. If he just did those three, that's all I care about. I don't care. Oh, so the Dickey deal turned out Syndergaard was pretty good. I go back again. I can live with that.
Yeah.
I understand that. They thought they had a chance to get an ace. Dickey was coming off a Cy Young. You got to give up. Syndergaard could be win five Cy Youngs, and I wouldn't say, see, that was stupid. No, I'm not going to say that was stupid because at the time it made sense. You're trying to be great. And here's a marketplace for 20 years that had thrived on mediocrity. Yeah, let's just call it what it is. They never played meaningful games in September. Why did we buy tickets as consumers? Because David Price was pitching for somebody else.
Yeah.
Let's go see Boston because they got stars.
Or Halliday was on.
Let's go see. Yeah, right. And then Halliday goes to Philadelphia. Oh, and by the way, for Kyle Drabek. Yeah, it's a really good thing they got Kyle Drabek in that. That really worked out well. And Halliday goes on and wins a championship in Philadelphia. And Carlos Delgado gets to a World Series with the Mets. And everybody's happy, right? I'm tired of that. Those days are gone. So anyway.
What's interesting, though, is with Anthopoulos, I mean, a lot of those are his moves as well, right? I mean, I guess that was the Ricciardi era at that point. But he really, his tenure in Toronto wasn't looking so hot until last year, and he really turned things around.
There's no doubt he made it by that week.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, signing Russell Martin. Martin and Donaldson were targeted by him because they needed to change the culture in the locker room. They took a lot of flyers on guys with the upside, like Yunel Escobar, Lowry, and they tried to build a team with like taking chances because they didn't really have much when he got here. He didn't realize they had a weird clubhouse. Colby Rasmus is the guy.
Yeah.
They had a divided clubhouse. They had guys with a lot of talent, but they couldn't put together. Last year, they kind of put together these kind of grinders, and that's such a...
Well, the ship was sinking, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's gone a long way from Lyle Overbay and Colby Rasmus, who, were decent major leaguers, to Donaldson and Tulowitzki and Martin and...
Saunders. Who are championship caliber players.
Michael Saunders. Yeah, let's forget about him. Another guy who's hitting 300 and who's been...
All-star.
And was hurt last year and an all-star something else. We've got a couple of minutes, guys. What's the latest on Sportsnet magazine? I know we'll be hearing and seeing a lot of you, Jeff, with the NFL season coming up. Talk to us about that.
Well, all the teams are kicking off training camp this week. Preseason starts next week, and there's always storylines with football, and I'll probably be on with you guys every Sunday. And
Buffalo Bills playoffs, yes or no? Give us this.
I want to see it so bad, but I'm going no.
Again.
I know. Last year I bought in. I was fully in, and I was so let down by the whole thing, and I don't think they have enough to make that jump yet.
Quarterbacking, get a quarterback. Look at the teams that win quarterbacks. I mean, even if they're not any good anymore, in the case of Peyton Manning, we had you on the other night talking the Rogers Cup. That was cool. How talks about that?
Yeah, I have tons more Rogers Cup coverage on sportsnet.ca all weekend long. If in Sportsnet magazine right now, if you get the current issue, you can go on the website and subscribe. We have a whole 8 pages of tennis content in there. Big feature on Djokovic, Carol Zhao, young Canadian a woman coming up. And also, it's our Olympic preview issue, so definitely worthwhile to check out now. Get yourself ready for next week already, I think it is.
It's right, August the 5th it starts. You're right, it is next week. It's August 1st on Monday. It'll be fascinating to see how it all transpires. And again, we talked about it today, the Canadians and this country compared to the Olympics in Vancouver, although it was a Winter Olympics, changed our perception, I think, of Canadian athletes and how important it is to have somebody to cheer for in this country. We're never the same as a sporting nation after Vancouver.
We're a great sports country. You know, we really are. And you see it when there's a national event, like an international event like that where Canadians are involved. We really come together. It's really cool to see.
And the Blue Jay fans come together. That's the hashtag line.
There you go.
Jays and Orioles coming up pregame at 12:30, first pitch at 107. Gentlemen, great to be with you today. Lots of fun. Thanks, boys.
Yeah, this is cool. Thanks.
Yeah, it was a good show.
Thank you, guys. Dave Zimmerman, Jeff Simmons, Sportsnet Magazine. Ben Ennis will be back in the chair next Saturday. I'm Roger Lajoie. I'll stay in the chair for a little while because coming up, we'll talk some Blue Jays with you between 12 and 12:30 Eastern time. First pitch, 107, and the pregame show with Mike Wilner gets underway at 12:30. And, of course, the Jays and the Orioles. Jay Happ on the mound as the Blue Jays could be in first place in the American League East at the end of the day. And by the end of the day, will there be a trade to talk about? Well, if there is, you'll hear it here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Once again, for Dave Zerum and Jeff Simmons, I'm Roger Lajoie. You've been listening to Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.